Members, 1 o'clock having arrived, I'm going to call this March 9th, 2021 meeting of the Taxes Committee to order under Rules 10.01, which guides remote hearings. Members of the public, if you would like to have the materials like we do, the best way to do that is go to the Minnesota House of Representatives website and then go to committees and then taxes and then off to the right-hand side, you will find those materials. So with that, members, Ms. Griska, if you would please call the roll.
Marquardt.
Present.
Marquardt, present. Liz Lagarde.
Present.
Liz Lagarde, present. Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Abaje.
Present.
Abaje, present. Carlson.
Carlson's present.
Carlson, present. Detmer.
Detmer, present.
Detmer, present. Garofalo.
Garofalo, present.
Garofalo, present. Gomez.
Gomez, present.
Gomez, present. Her.
Her, present.
Her, present. Hertas.
Hertas, present.
Hertas, present. Howard. Howard. McDonald. McDonald. Miller.
Miller, present.
Miller, present. Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Mortensen.
Present.
Mortensen, present. Robbins.
Present.
Robbins, present. Sandell. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Schultz.
Present.
Schultz, present. Stevenson.
Present.
Stevenson, present. Swazinski.
Present.
Swazinski, present. Joachim.
Present.
Joachim, present. Howard. McDonald. We do have a quorum.
Ms. Griska, thank you so much. We have a quorum. At this time, I'd like to move to approval of the minutes. Representative Les Lagarde, have you reviewed and would you like to move the March 3rd, 2021 minutes of the Taxes Committee?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
A motion's been made. We have a motion on the March 3rd, 2021 minutes. Is there any discussion or corrections, changes? Seeing none, I would ask members to momentarily unmute yourself as we take a vote on the March 3rd, 2021 taxes minutes approval. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 3rd, 2021 taxes minutes are approved. I also want to mention the March 8th referral memo that went down to division for members to look at. All right, members, we have five bills on the agenda. The first bill up is House File 1658. Representative Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the House File 1658 for possible inclusion.
Very good. Would you please explain what House File 1658 does?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Last spring, when the COVID-19 virus first struck, the pandemic caused an economic crisis. The state saw a surge in unemployment applications unlike any it had ever seen before. In the 3 weeks in late March and early April, DEED actually received more UI applications just during those 3 weeks than it did in all of 2019. And at the same time, the federal government passed the CARES Act, creating a new $600 a week supplemental UI benefit, as well as a new program called Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, which provided a UI-like benefit to millions of people who historically weren't able to get UI at all, the gig workers and independent contractors. So think for a minute about what the state and federal government were asking DEED to do during that time. process more applications in a month than they usually do in a year, and create two new massive programs impacting thousands of Minnesotans all during a pandemic, and oh yeah, make sure you're properly socially distanced while you're doing it. Judged in the light of those circumstances, Deed did remarkably well. We were one of the first states to get those $600 payments out the door, and one of the first, if not the first, state to get PUA off the ground. Deed speed was particularly important in the face of an economic crisis we were facing at the time, and without Deed acting quickly, a bad situation would certainly have been worse. But speed is not without cost. In order to get those relief payments out the door as quickly as possible, Deed did not withhold taxes from the $600 payments. To do that would have entailed delaying the relief for a substantial period of time. So Minnesotans got unemployment relief payments where tax was withheld on a portion of their benefit, the regular portion, but not the whole thing. And the consequence is that many are now facing an unexpected tax burden. My bill would wipe out that unexpected tax burden by allowing a subtraction for the supplemental unemployment insurance or unemployment, in other words, the extra $600 a week and $300 a week payments. Now, a lot has been said about the K-shaped economic recovery we are in, and all recessions fall disproportionately on poor people, but this one was particularly bad, and the recovery has been historically inequitable. And this bill is a way to provide funds directly to the people who were hit hardest by the economic crisis. If we can afford to help anyone with a tax cut right now, we should be prioritizing those hit hardest and those who are most vulnerable. And that's what this bill does. And Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
So thank you very much, Representative Stevenson. And since even your bill was introduced, of course, what the federal government is now looking to pass through, at least what the Senate passed through, would allow a subtraction up to the first, $10,200 of that income. So that's, it hasn't gone into law, but that's something they're considering at this point. So first of all, any questions for Representative Stevenson on the bill before we move any further? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, and either for the author or for nonpartisan staff. So there has been, at the federal level, the $2 trillion plan that's going through right now. There is language in that bill that either directly or indirectly prohibits states from cutting taxes. And if maybe either the author or nonpartisan staff could tell us how that the interaction of that, how we expect that interaction in that bill is going to apply to this bill.
Staff would like to, Mr. Williams.
Chair Marquardt and Representative Garofalo, I pulled up kind of parsing through the congressional record, what I think is the Senate language from the federal bill about the using the funds provided to states and local governments, and the Senate passed stimulus bill. There's sort of three categories that are allowed uses under the federal law. It can be used to respond to the public health emergency or its negative economic impacts. There's some specific details about what could be done there, assistance to households, small businesses or nonprofits, or aid to impacted industries. It can also be used for the provision of government services to the extent of the reduction in the revenue for the state, or to make necessary investments in water, sewer, or broadband infrastructure. There's also a separate paragraph in the federal bill that essentially says a state or can't use the funds to either directly or indirectly offset a reduction in the net tax revenue of the state during the covered period, is the language of the bill, by reducing a tax. And the covered period is defined as a period of time beginning on March 3rd and ending on the date in which all funds provided by the federal act are spent by the state.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative Garofalo. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and Mr. Williams, and again, I realize that this bill is still being drafted at the Federal House of Representatives. I have the language of the Schumer Amendment that was offered. At what point would we know – and yeah, I should clarify this. It's not that it prohibits us from reducing taxes. The $2 trillion bill doesn't do that. What it does say, though, is that there would be an offset. So if we were to reduce taxes in a manner that violated the Schumer Amendment, this would result in our assistance being given by the federal government being reduced. When will we know sort of the parameters around how that's going to be enforced or applied to our state?
Mr. Chair, were you intending to recognize me there?
I think he did.
Very good. Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I think that the bill would obviously still have to pass the United States House and then start to be administered by the federal government. There may be guidance issued on how the funds are spent, and then MMB may also have some guidance on that sort of once we receive money. So I don't know the exact date, but we'd sort of have to wait till we receive guidance.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman, are you still there?
You hear me, Representative Groff?
It's your audio is very sporadic. So, am I the only one who's having problems here or no?
So, if we can just recess here just quickly, what I'm going to do here,
All right. Sounded like he was turning the gavel over to me to run the meeting and just to implement the agenda I wanted. Is that what everyone else heard?
No.
Okay.
I think Vice Chair Liz Lagarde, can you take the gavel?
Yeah, if you could take the gavel. I'm going to call in members. I don't know if you can hear me, but I'm going to call in here and get back in. So.
Okay.
Representative Les Lagarde, if you want to take things over right now, that'd be great.
I sure will. Representative Garofalo, any more questions?
Yep. Thank you, Representative Les Lagarde, or Mr. Chairman. If I could, I want to share with members of the committee the language that's involved, just so everyone understands unless the federal government changes the stimulus bill, we're going to have some specific problems. And so this is the actual language from the Schumer Amendment. And Mr. Chairman, I don't want to share my screen without your permission, but all my screen has is just the language around this. Can I share this with members of the committee to see what I'm referring to?
I do not see a problem with that.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to get your permission before I did it. I'm not goofing around or anything. It's literally just going to share that screen. So I'll do that right now. And so, Mr. Chairman, if you could just let me know when you see this language on the screen.
I do see it, Representative Garofalo.
Okay, so this is the Schumer language right here. And really quickly, it says, a state or territory shall not use the funds provided under this section or transferred, blah, 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 directly or indirectly offset a reduction in net tax revenue of such state or territory resulting from a change in law, regulation, administrative interpretation during the covered period that reduces any tax by providing for a reduction in rate, rebate, a deduction, a credit, or otherwise. Now, I think that the problem here is that this language or indirectly is problematic. Now, obviously, if the federal government's giving us assistance, if we were to take that money and then appropriate it directly as a tax reduction, I think I understand what they would be getting at. The problem is the inclusion of this indirectly language. The consequence of this is that it could result in any tax relief we offer in Minnesota diminishing our federal appropriation. So that is the problem I just wanted to highlight for members of the committee. I think it would be extraordinarily helpful if members on the tax committee could reach out to their members of Congress, regardless of party, and have them fix this issue. To describe this as problematic is a massive understatement. I think right now, and Mr. Williams, I don't want to speak on behalf of you, but I think right now is it fair to say that you are waiting for guidance on what this language, how they're going to enforce it or what it means? Is that a fair statement?
And before we go on, can folks hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
We can.
All right, very good. So Representative Les Lagarde, thank you. Hopefully I'll still be on here, but I heard what Representative Garofalo asked. And so, Mr. Williams, can you answer that at this time?
Chair Mark Wharton, Representative Garofalo, I think that, as I mentioned, you know, as you mentioned as well, the bill has not, you know, yet been enacted federally, and then there may be guidance on how this money is distributed to the states and what are allowed uses. And so I think that we don't quite know exactly how this will work.
Okay. And Mr.
Representative Garofalo, your line here is excellent. I mean, there's a lot there, and I don't think we know exactly what it all means. But it could have, as you're saying, Representative Garofalo, some very significant implications. And so please proceed, but thank you for this.
Yeah, and just, you know, obviously if rank-and-file members are reaching out to the members of Congress, I think that has an impact. But if the highly esteemed and very powerful chairman of the Tax Committee were to do the same thing, perhaps it could have a greater impact. But that is – obviously that is – I don't think anyone intended at the federal level – for that to block Representative Stevenson's – or to punish us for enacting Representative Stevenson's bill or for excluding PPP loans from taxation. But that's how the language reads right now with the Schumer Amendment. And I don't – I would hope that there's nobody on this call or in this committee who supports that language as it's written right now, that we could try to get them to change that. So, Mr. Chairman, you also mentioned the change in the $10,000, $10,200 exclusion. Can we have either the author or nonpartisan staff walk through the two different models? I have an amendment drafted that we can address based on how you'd like it, but can we just have the author and or Mr. Williams explain those two different models?
Yeah, let's go to Mr. Williams on that. So, because he'd have the federal model, also the new potential legislation. So, Mr. Williams.
Chair Mark Wharton, Representative Garofalo. As I read the federal legislation, and this is all still kind of tentative, but my interpretation of what I've read in the congressional record is that the federal legislation allows an exclusion from gross income for any unemployment compensation up to $10,200. For taxpayers whose adjusted gross income is $150,000 or less. And the legislation also says that for a married couple filing a joint return, it'd be $10,200 for each spouse. The other kind of detail that I saw in the federal legislation I haven't dug into in much further detail is that they have kind of a slightly different definition of adjusted gross income that's being used. I think the reason for that is that because UI is included in adjusted gross income, they're trying to make sure that there's no circular definition there. So I haven't really dug into those details, but sort of the big picture is it's $10,200 per individual for taxpayers with adjusted gross income less than $150,000. And as Representative Stevenson said, one final detail is the federal bill applies to tax year 2020 only, whereas Representative Stevenson, as he described his bill, it's just for the supplemental unemployment insurance payments of either $600 or $300, and it's for tax year 2020 or 2021.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I think it's important for people to understand that what the federal Congress, what they've done at the federal level is they've decided a more equitable way of helping those who are unemployed, that rather than treating the enhanced unemployment benefits, rather than treating those differently and picking winners and losers where some unemployed receive a tax benefit and others don't, what they've done is just said $10,000, $200 unemployment income tax year 20 is going to be excluded from taxation. And so that way it's a much more equitable, much more fair distribution. They do have that $150,000 cap in AGI. But it's important for members. I have an amendment to basically conform us. I don't want to offer that amendment quite yet, but I want to explain that to members of the committee so that, you know, this would – what my amendment would do is put us in conformity with what is happening at the federal level so that we're not picking the winners of the unemployment who are unemployed or losers who are unemployed, but rather treating them fairly just like the Congress did.
Thank you. Representative Stevenson, your bill kind of also deals with what, like you mentioned, what was withheld or wasn't withheld. Did you want to comment on that some more?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that it's an interesting idea that Representative Garofalo is bringing to the table today. You know, as I think we've discussed, Mr. Williams noted, the chair noted, others noted, the federal bill isn't enacted yet. And Representative Garofalo is lobbying in committee right now that it be changed, which is just, you know, an example that things could change. So, you know, we have to keep an eye on that. But I really think it's an interesting idea. We also don't have any idea how much it would cost to switch to that methodology. And of course, there's a you know, million different permutations to that way you could do it. You could go up, exclude the full 10,200, conform exactly to the way the federal government did. You could pick a lower amount as well. But we don't know how much the cost is at this point either. I think, you know, maybe a better approach might be for Representative Garofalo to introduce that as a separate bill. I'd be pleased to sign on to it as a co-author, because I think that the important thing here is that we need to figure out a way to help people who have been hit hard by the pandemic and the resulting economic crisis, and not add to their troubles by giving them a surprise tax bill.
So thank you, Representative Stevenson. What I would suggest here, because first of all, there's just a lot of unknowns, you know, even with potentially the Representative Garofalo's amendment as far as cost and the fact that, in fact, you know, the federal government even hasn't passed that quite yet, is that this bill is going to be laid over. You know, there's, because we're looking ahead to the federal bill being passed, there's going to be more work done. I mean, you know, would we include the extension going past March of 2021 that this bill would do also? I mean, there's a number of things. Or Representative Garofalo, if you'd like to, I don't know if you're thinking about introducing a bill to that impact, we could, you know, actually get the details of what that would do and so forth. But that would be my suggestion, members, is to proceed with what we have, lay this bill over with, you know, the absolute necessity and guarantee that we are going to have to, I mean, this is an issue that we're not done working on, needless to say, just because of what the federal government is doing. So your thoughts on that, Representative Garofalo, and, you know, certainly, I mean, either which way you want to be involved on that, but I just think today we don't have enough information on some of these other options.
Sure, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. I mean, I do think it's important to point out that the bill as it's before us today, we don't know what that costs, because the go ahead.
There is a note. I mean, it's $237 million that I should have mentioned earlier. There is that. But you're saying because of potential questions on the federal law that we don't know.
Right. Well, Mr. Chairman, because the federal legislation extends the $300 additional assistance. That's not listed in the current revenue note. So we don't know what this version of the bill costs.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I think this bill assumes through March of 2021. That's in the revenue estimate. If I'm looking at it here, it says insurance payments from March 2023, February 2021. So I think that's what the costs are at this point, the 237.9.
Million. And that is correct, Mr. Chairman, but at the federal level, what they're doing is they're extending that $300 bonus. I believe they're extending it till like Labor Day.
Yes.
And so that's the problematic part of this. And
right.
And I think, Mr. Chairman, part of this is that, and I can talk offline with you if it's necessary, but, you know, what's happening with me and a lot of other members is I'm starting to get communications from people who were unemployed saying, hey, I'm being told I have a huge tax bill due in 5 weeks and I don't have the money. And so normally the way we deal with conformity is, yeah, it'd be nice to get things done by April 15th, but, you know, it goes till the end of session, it happens, whatever. The communications I'm getting are that from people who are unemployed, like, they don't have the money for this. They don't, and so it's not just the PPP loans. that this is happening under. This is also happening to people who are unemployed. And Chairman Representative David said this earlier. I don't speak on behalf of my caucus, but in this case, I will tell you, if we move forward with this bill, you're not going to see any amendments from us. And if someone does go rogue and offer an amendment, you're not going to see support for roll calls on it. This is an essential item for people who are really hurt. So if there's any, whatever I can do to make it easier for you to get this bill to move forward and not wait till the end of session, that's the guidance I'm going to follow from you, Mr. Chairman, because we really do need to get this done. If that means not offering the amendment, if that means introducing it as a separate bill, but I just want to implore you, this can't wait until the omnibus bill at the end of session.
And Representative Garofalo, thank you so much. And that's, you know, Representative Stevenson brought the bill forward because it is the funds that he's doing the subtraction on are those that taxes were not withheld on. So other, you know, the regular state unemployment taxes were withheld, but not on these federal supplemental. And that's kind of a big part of getting the sticker shock. And I mean, the fact is we don't know what these total costs are going to be. We don't even know for sure. I don't think the House is probably going to make any changes to the Senate bill. It's going to take a little bit more time before we at least know what the federal government does. A lot of questions to be answered yet. And not that we can't do that quickly. And as I've mentioned, I think all of this relief is important. And, you know, I know leadership has been talking about doing potentially a bill sooner rather than later. But and I think we're in a pretty good position. You know, on the PPP, we've heard the bill. It's laid over. It's sitting here. We at least now today would have a bill laid over, you know, kind of ready to go, even if we had to revamp it some and so forth. So thank you, Representative Garofalo. Anything more, Representative Garofalo? I appreciate very much your point.
No, just Mr. Chairman, I think you know our motive. Unlike some other times, our motives on this one are 100% pure. We need to do this and just conform. If the federal government ends up passing the bill the way it looks like they're going to, we really need to conform with them. We don't need to touch 2021 yet, but for 2020. We should really conform with the federal government and get that done before April 15th, before we give the voters another reason to be mad at all of us. So thank you.
Oh. Representative Garofalo, thanks so much. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this bill forward, and Representative Garofalo for your heartfelt need to address this issue as it is. Members, I'd like to just point out that this conformity, we need not go down a path like we did with Section 179, where it took 2 years to get things straightened out. I think a lot of the folks who receive unemployment benefits oftentimes do not hire people to do their taxes and plow through it on their own. And there are certain inexpensive software programs that assist them in doing their taxes. I think one thing that hasn't been discussed, Representative Stevenson, is that the federal deduction, the $10,200, is equal to the amount of money that the federal government dispersed to each recipient. It's 17 weeks times the $600, so that's the $10,200. I believe that is the number that is a deduction. I see Representative Garofalo shaking his head. Maybe I have that incorrect, but that's my understanding. That's the number that was picked. $10,200 equals those weeks of benefit. So the cost, by excluding it, the federal government is saying no taxes due on that by having that exclusion, at least for those income levels that probably matter most. And that's why I would encourage entertaining taking up the Garofalo amendment and attaching it to this bill so that we can move forward and maybe even talk about passage of this thing before spring break. That would be wonderful to let all of our constituents know we're 100% 100% behind them and have their back. So those are my comments.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. I saw Representative Swazinski, I think, had his hand up, but now it's not there. Representative Swazinski, did you?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just, you know, whenever I was going to offer some just general support along the lines of what Garofalo was saying, you know, I mean, you've got Republican support if you want to declare an emergency and bring a tax cut bill to the floor, we're going to be behind you 100%. So.
And Representative Swazinski, and I appreciate that, and Chair David, Representative Garofalo, and others have offered that, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Any other questions or thoughts? Is there anyone on the Zoom meeting that would like to testify? All right, Representative Stevenson, would you like to close?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you for this, I thought, really productive discussion. I really do appreciate both of the points that Representative Garofalo raised. I think they are both very important for us to think about, and I'm very genuine in saying that I'd be pleased to continue to work with Representative Garofalo on that issue, and if you decide to submit it as a separate bill, I'd be pleased to sign on as a co-author. I think we have a shared goal here of helping the people hit hardest by the pandemic, and I'm hopeful that we'll be able to accomplish that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I renew my motion.
Representative Stevenson renews his motion to lay over House File 1658 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill. Thank you very much, and thank you for the discussion on this, and there's certainly more to come on this issue, so thank you. House next on the agenda, House File 1732, Representative Abadje, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move this bill for further inclusion.
Very good. Representative, if you would please proceed.
Thank you, and hi everyone on the committee. So earlier this session, we had heard a presentation about the tax expenditure budget and how those are accounted for in our state budget. So what House File 1732 does is actually address one of the recommendations in those presentations, which was to attach purpose statements to all tax expenditures that we pass as a legislature. So this bill takes a retrospective look at the tax expenditures passed since the 2014 Omnibus Tax Bill. And so this bill then would only apply to propose or to add purpose statements to those tax expenditures that don't have one listed. So it would add purpose statements to the tax expenditures from the 2014 Omnibus Tax Bill, the 2016 Omnibus Supplemental Spending Bill, the 2017 Tax Conformity Bill, the 2017 Omnibus Tax Bill, and the 2019 Tax So I'm bringing this forward so as we continue to discuss the importance of having transparency in our government function, this bill is definitely a step towards that goal and will help with future evaluations to ensure that our tax expenditures are actually achieving the purpose that it's intended. So I thank you, Mr. Chair, and the committee for consideration of this bill.
Very good. Thank you very much. Anything from I'm going to go to House Partisan Research staff and on this. And in defense, and first of all, Representative Abadje, thank you so much for bringing this forward. And in defense of past chairs, tax chairs, Linteski and David, and I guess myself, typically the House has always been very good at putting purpose statements on tax expenditures. We always have a little more problems with the other body to keep those in as we negotiate and so forth. But anyone from House Research staff need anything to add on this or on this process? Mr. Williams. Oh, no, okay. All right, very good. Questions for Representative Abadje? Anyone that might be in the audience that would like to testify for or against House File 1732? Representative Abaje, you've done an excellent job there. Do you have any closing comments on your bill?
No, I just think that this is just a good step forward in that direction that we've talked about. So, thank you.
Very good. And would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion that this be considered laid over for consideration.
Very good. Thank you very much. Next, third bill on the agenda, House File 1591, Representative Swazinski. Would you care to move your bill?
Absolutely. I would like to, Mr. Chair, move House File 1591 before the Tax Committee for possible inclusion and a future tax bill.
Very good. Representative Swazinski, please proceed.
Well, folks, we've all heard with pandemic and the meat shortages that we had earlier in the year, a lot of our small town butcher shops really felt the brunt of it. As the large processing plants in southern Minnesota and other parts of our state really held a pinch with their COVID spread within their operations, we really saw just a major pinch go to our local butcher shops. Like all workforces across our state, we have an aging workforce. Most folks in agriculture are 55 plus, and those that cut meat are in that same range. There was a study done a few years back that estimate that two-thirds of butcher shop owners are going to retire here in the next few years. And so we're going to have to really look at innovative ways to, one, get people into the industry, and two, to increase investment, and three, also increase capacity. No matter where you're at, I think the code word for food is local, and the ability to know the farmer or know the field that your food came from is a big deal. And so we've seen butcher shops get overwhelmed. You talk to any of your local shops that do custom work, whether in cattle, pigs, or poultry, or sheep, they're probably booked out past 2021 and already starting to book into 2022. So we have a huge need, a huge want. It's partially because of COVID. People saw prices go through the roof. Restaurants couldn't find food. Grocery stores couldn't get the meat that they needed to sell at normal prices. And so a lot of pressure was put on our local producers and our local butcher shops. This bill, because of food is a unique situation in Minnesota being sales tax free, would also work to increase investment, increase modernization, and also help draw in young people into the profession. It would get rid of the sales tax on capital costs when it comes to butcher shops, saws, grinders, the things that are really at the base of building a solid operation in Minnesota. We're looking to build any possible tools in a toolbox to make sure that these businesses thrive and grow, but also have a good opportunity to get past the next generation, whether it be someone in the family or a new entrepreneur looking to make a statement on Minnesota agriculture. I know there's a couple of letters that were sent in. There's one from the Minnesota Farm Bureau. If you saw that in your email from Nathan, the committee administrator, and I believe there might be some other ag organizations willing to testify on behalf of the bill, but we're looking to cut the sales tax on those particular to encourage those investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swazinski. And we do have, I know, Stu Laurie, who is here to testify. Mr. Laurie?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Marquardt and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Laurie, Government Relations Director for the Minnesota Farmers Union, and eager to testify briefly in support of Representative Swazinski's bill. This is the number one agricultural issue that we hear about from our members. There's a severe shortage of livestock processing, particularly for those small and mid-sized producers and who are marketing locally. And just as Representative Swazinski said in his introduction, that bottleneck in processing was intensified by COVID, and we hear that every day. I have an email in my inbox from a farmer, and her processor can't get her chickens in until 2022, which, if you know anything about chickens, they're going to be pretty big by then. And so that's not going to work for her business. Two threads that I wanted to pick up on from what Representative Swazinski said about, why this investment is really timely, and I think they're really important. One, You know, a lot of our members who are doing that direct marketing, they were selling directly to restaurants. And a lot of those folks at the beginning of the pandemic saw their businesses wiped out, literally lost 90% of their business overnight. And so they had to quickly adjust to marketing, direct to consumer and marketing locally. And so those small scale butcher shops are really, really important to them. The second thing is that aging workforce piece. You know, we're absolutely in the same spot with those butcher shops as we are in agriculture. And I was talking to the smart folks over at the Agricultural Utilization and Research Institute, and I said, how do we make sure that we can transition these plants and make sure that that infrastructure gets passed on to the next generation? And what they said is, hey, if those plants are up to date, they've invested in new equipment, they're really turnkey and clean and have made those investments, they're going to be a lot easier to transition. So I think it's a smart investment in that next generation as well. And just to state the obvious and what you all know well, but if we do that processing locally at a small plant, that wealth that we generate in rural communities by raising livestock, it stays there and serves that consumer demand. So another tool in the toolbox and eager to support it. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Laurie. Any questions for Mr. Laurie? Is there anyone else on the Zoom that would like to testify on House File 1591? House research staff, Ms. Hagler, anything to add on this bill that hasn't been covered?
Mr. Chair, Alex Hagler, House Research. I just wanted to say that this will act similar to Representative Baker's bill that the committee heard a few weeks ago.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions from members? And the cost I have here, revenue estimate is $610,000 for this biennium and $660,000 into the next biennium. I don't see any other comments. Representative Swiezinski, a wonderful job as always. Anything you want to add?
Well, I could just add just a little bit, just for a little bit of background. So as members are visiting with constituents and other folks that might be interested in this bill, there are really two major types of operations in the state. There are equal to facilities, which would be kind of a like what you'd consider a large USDA inspected facility that sell at wholesale, sell for, you know, large restaurants. And then there's the custom exempt, which would be more of your custom order. So you have a cow, you bring it in, you butcher it, you bring it home, that sort of thing. So there's really those two styles. And those are the really areas we're looking to try to expand and grow. You know, employees, obviously we hear whether it's welding, teachers, education, daycare workers, or group homes, employee shortages are happening across the board. One, because of some of the employment issues that we have, but two, when they modernize these facilities, it increases their capacity. And I think that's one of those things that the product, the machine, that saw, that whatever, can actually increase the capacity and ability to process more animals more efficiently and more cost effectively. And we appreciate this opportunity to speak to the committee. And if you do have questions, take it offline. And appreciate it, Representative Markwart, for hearing the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Swiezinski. And would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move again to move the House file to be included in the next possible bill. Thank you.
Very, very good. Representative Swiezinski moves to lay over House File 1591 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Very good. Representative Leslie Gard, would you care to take over the chair for the next two bills?
I sure would, Mr. Chair. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1679 from Chair Markwart. Chair Markwart, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to do that. I'd like to move House File 1679 for possible inclusion into the House omnibus tax bill. And so members, last week we heard from Representative Wolgamont on a June accelerated sales tax payment, and this deals with that. And it was first, this June accelerated was first enacted in 1981 when we were in budget deficit times, and it's been used as a shift. And, you know, Representative Garofalo talked about this also last week. And so right now, if you're a company that has $250,000 or more of taxable of sales tax that you have to remit. By June 28th, which is right before the next fiscal year, you have to pay an 87.5% of your June sales taxes. And that goes for this year, and then in the future, that'll be 84.5%. And if this bill was to become law and it all happened in 1 year, you're able to take these percentages down to zero. The cost would be about $263.4 million to the general fund and $15 million to the Natural Resources and Arts Fund. And so here's how this works. What the ultimate goal is to get these percentages down to zero. The takeaway, kind of one of the last remaining budget shifts that we have in our budget. So the way it would work is that if there is a budget surplus, and that's as they talk, is a positive unrestricted budgetary general fund balance. State law says it first has to go to fill the cash flow account to get the $350 million. Well, that's done. Then second, one third of any budget surplus has to go to the budget reserve, and that number gets to a certain number. And that number is $2.43 billion. We're at about $1.89 billion right now. So that's another $560 million to go. And then the third thing it has to do is cover the 90-10 payment in aids to school districts. And that's what we're at right now. And if you remember, like back in like 2011, 2012, 2013, we were like, I think, as far down as 60-40 on those payments. That's kind of a shift. That's all been paid back to 90-10. The fourth thing is an education property tax recognition shift. That's also been taken care of. Then the fifth thing that reserve would go to is to get the Minnesota 21st Century Fund up to $20 million. And then next in line would be the June accelerated payments. So, for example, we're not that far off. So if we have, and by the way, it goes off of the November forecast. And that way, the Department of Revenue can determine things by March, and then that would apply for the June sales taxes. But if there was, for example, a $1 billion surplus, the first 33% has to go to the budget reserve, and then the remaining 67% would go to the Minnesota 21st Century Fund, and then June accelerated. And we'd be able to cover all that just within 1 year. So that is the bill. And I think that's it, Mr. Chair. I think that's what the bill does.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair Marquardt. Members, for the record, we do have letters from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce and the Minnesota retailers in support of the bill. I would also like to ask Ms. Templin to go over the revenue estimate. Ms. Templin, can you explain the revenue implications of House File 1679, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. Yes, the revenue estimate for House File 1679 provides informational estimate of what the total revenue reduction could be if there is a 100% repeal of June accelerated for sales tax. The revenue estimate at the bottom gives the estimated total revenue reduction to the general fund if there is enough money or a positive unrestricted balance after all the priorities in the budget reserve have been allocated. If there the revenue estimate points out that it would cost about $263.4 million to the general fund to eliminate June acceleration. And the revenue estimate also provides the cost to the legacy funds of about an estimated cost of about $15.2 million. And this would be a one-time cost for the most part to the general fund. And this would be booked in the November forecast if there is a positive balance for this to occur. You do not see a cost at the, this is not a cost that can be tracked in a spreadsheet at this point, because right now we do not have information about what the November forecast will look like. There is an assumption that it could have a surplus, but we, in order, well, if this is enacted, it the cost would be estimated in November. So again, the revenue estimate is just informational for just ballpark information about the cost of the repeal to the general fund and to the legacy funds.
Thank you, Ms. Templin. Members, are there any questions for Ms. Templin? Seeing none, hearing none. Members, are there any questions for Chair Marquardt on House File 1679? Okay, seeing none, Chair Marquardt, any closing comments?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And, you know, this is, I think, a way in which to get rid of kind of one of the last big shifts that we have. And certainly this would be a real benefit to businesses, as you heard last week when Representative Wolgamont had his bill up. And so this just kind of puts it in a priority. And, you know, if we had a decent budget surplus next year, this could all be taken care of really in 1 year. So members, thank you for listening to this, and I would like to renew my motion to lay over House File 1679 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt renews his motion to lay over House File 1679 for possible inclusion. Next, we have our final bill. It is 1937 from Chair Marquardt. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I will move House File 1937 to be laid over for possible inclusion into the House Tax Omnibus Bill.
Chair Marquardt moves his motion. Would you like to present your bill?
I will. And Representative Hertaus, I think it was, that mentioned Section 179 today. So here it is back. If you remember last year, you know, this was a major priority for many, many years. But in tax committee last year, we talked about it and was a top priority. And finally, in October, in whatever special session that was, in a very strong bipartisan fashion, which Section 179 always has been, it passed full conformity to Section 179. And what that bill did last year, it said retroactively into tax years 18 and 19, if you had an exchange to the 1031 exchange and with the federal changes increased your tax liability, then the conformity on Section 179, the full conformity, you'd be able to deduct up to $1 million all at once, would it take effect. But if you weren't in a Section 1031 in purchased property in 18 and 19, you weren't covered by that. And because the bill for full conformity to Section 179 on all equipment placed in service was starting with tax year 2020. So the big question is, what if you placed equipment in service in 2019? What you'd have to do is add back 80% of that cost, and then that would be depreciated over the next 5 years. And the way the current law reads, that means someone who placed something in equipment operation 2019 would actually have to depreciate under the old rules. What this says is that starting in tax year 2020, regardless of when you place that into service, once you hit 2020, you'd be able to deduct the rest of that and the full conformity would apply. So it's kind of cleaning up really what was the intent from what we did last year. And the cost is $5.2 million in the first year, but actually in subsequent years, because current law would have deductions in those years that now would be taken up front, so that'd actually be a revenue gain of $1.4 million into the next 3 years. So, Mr. Chairman and members, that is my bill.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Members, any questions for Chair Marquardt on House File 1937? Seeing none, Representative Marquardt, any closing comments?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would say, and I know you'd mentioned some letters of support for 1679. There's also, I think, a letter of support from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce on House File 1937 also. So, members, this is kind of completing what we did on a bipartisan level last year, and to get that job done and meet the intent of what we wanted to do on fully conforming to Section 179. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
All right. Thank you, Representative Marquardt. Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1937 be laid over for possible inclusion, and the bill is laid over. Members, thank you for your work today, and we are now adjourned.